Hi, my name is Carolyn.
And I am Layla Bernard.
And you are listening to the Sleepover Podcast.
Welcome.
Hi. So we're here with Layla's husband, Rory.
Hello.
We also have with us my baby Solomon, plus my daughter Lulu, and Brucey's hanging out too. So if you hear kid sounds, that's what that is. And we were just talking about, Brucey's tired. We were just talking about how the overarching name of our brand, so the brand that includes the Electric Yes online community, that includes Sleepover Mystery School, is, well, basically coming into existence, and it's being called the Invisible College. Yeah, and the Invisible College is a term, Rory asked me, where does that term come from? And I'm pretty sure it came into being around the time of, like, the discourse about Rosicrucianism in Europe in, like, the 17th century. And it has to do with this idea that there's this invisible group of masters who are, like, behind the scenes, kind of like the secret chiefs, and they're pulling strings, and they're sending inspirations, and they are, you know, like, basically that there's spiritually advanced people from around the world, the universe even, are connected by this kind of astral invisible college. And of course, Grant Morrison's famous book, The Invisibles, graphic novel, plays on that idea where they're like these magical superhero type people. And then Rory remembered something funny.
Well, because I'm a huge fantasy nerd, I read all the Discworld books by Terry Pratchett when I was younger, and they have something called the Unseen University, where all the wizards go to learn how to be wizards. So when Karen was like, we're the Invisible College, I was like, oh, well, I want to be the Bursar, which is the least interesting name. But then I remembered some more, including the Chair of Indefinite Studies. That's a good one. I've just got a couple of them here. We can see which ones really tickle our fancy. The head of postmortem communications.
I feel like David should be that one.
David's definitely the head of postmortem communications.
There's also a lecturer in recent runes.
Lecturer in recent runes. Okay, all right. Okay.
David's just sweeping up the positions.
This one could be, okay, who is this? The head of inadvisably applied magic.
Inadvisably applied magic. Ooh.
I feel like Layla and I could cover that.
Yeah, exactly.
The lecturer in creative uncertainty.
Creative uncertainty?
Oh, wow. I feel like I could handle that.
Creative uncertainty. Got it.
This is a good one. Chair of experimental serendipity.
Ooh, very Jungian.
That sounds like Alina to me.
Yeah, yes. I was thinking Alina. Chair for the public misunderstanding of magic.
Chair for the public misunderstanding of magic. Interesting.
Egregious professor of cruel and unusual geography.
Oh, that's my son Walter.
That is Walter. And then, you know, the last one that I think is somewhat funny is the posthumous professor of morbid bibliomancy.
Posthumous professor of morbid bibliomancy. Wow, Terry Pratchett's a huge dork.
He's a huge dork.
Yeah. Well, that's very fun. Thank you for sharing that, Rory. So the Invisible College, everybody. So keep your eyes out for that. We're going to be rolling that out eventually once we finish the new fancy website and everything. And speaking of the Invisible College, I was mindlessly scrolling Instagram last night, as one does, and I came across a lady who had a cool profile, and she had posted a quote from a book that I have read, actually, called The Raw Material. And Raw, R-A, which is fairly well known amongst enthusiasts of the extraterrestrial persuasion, people who watch Gaia, people who watch Disclosure.
I'm interested in reading this. It's by Ra, an humble messenger of the Law of One.
Yes. So we're going to share with you a quote that I found on this lady's page that immediately made me think of Layla.
Okay.
And I also thought it was fun because, like, I thought I'd never put it together before. Like, I was aware of this book called The Raw Material, which has Egyptian hieroglyphs on the front, and, like, Ra is, like, very clearly, like, the Egyptian sun god Ra. Yeah. And somehow I hadn't put it together, though, with the fact that, like, Ra is part of, or another name for, Ra Hor Kuit, mm-hmm. who, of course, is a major figure in Thelema, and who I have personally made the acquaintance of, because he appeared in my bedroom one night when I had sleep paralysis, and was indeed a giant blue hawk-faced person in golden Egyptian dress. When I realized this, and also, like, the people who are enthusiastic about the Ra material also tend to be enthusiastic about blue avians, which is a known species of extraterrestrial who appears, and they're, like, good guys. And I was, anyways, I put it together that Ra Hor Kuit
is a blue bird.
He's a blue avian.
Interesting.
And what's also interesting is, of course, in Thelema, something that Aleister Crowley talks about is Ra Hor Kuit is like the image of the holy guardian angel for everybody. Uh-huh. So until one mm-hmm. finds their own particular flavor of the holy guardian angel, they're supposed to, within Thelema, relate mm-hmm. to Ra Hor Kuit as their holy guardian angel, which indeed I first met Ra Hor Kuit not long after I started doing the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram, which is meant to put you in touch with the angel.
Well, and what, I guess what that's making me think about is how, like, you know, the Ma'at material talking about, like, the evolution of humans from our completely individualized consciousness into our individualized and also collectively conscious iteration, which will, you know, signal our sort of like leveling up and evolution as beings in the greater cosmos. It really makes me think about how, like, the thing that binds us all together on Earth, not only as humans, but as all life, is the sun. And, like, it is the sun, Ra, named Ra in the Egyptian mythology, who, like, is our programmer and our, like, master, and who is, like, sending his wisdom to all of us and truly, like, unites everyone. Like, every yeah. single being is made of the sun. Like, I remember last year, you know, we were looking at that cool bonfire and just feeling how, like, oh my God, like, this is the light of the sun just, like, here in front of us. And, like, there's no difference between the sun energy on the sun and the sun energy trapped in this wood and the sun energy that's, like, in all of our bodies from everything that we eat. And, like, truly, like, Ra Hor Kuit, the sun.
Force and fire.
Is who we really are. I don't want that. If we trace it all back, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, every man and every woman is a star.
Is a star.
Is the sun.
Right.
It's Ra Hor Kuit.
Right, and like, the goal of the Western esoteric tradition primarily is to identify oneself with that solar Tifereth sun. Like, there does seem to be an understanding that, like, as civilizations and living beings evolve and come into this, like, greater awareness of what they really are, like, they are their sun. They are the, like, sun that gives them life.
Yes, absolutely. And this is also really interesting to me because I've been thinking a lot lately about, you know, I love that Ken Wilber stuff. And Ken Wilber, why can't I remember if he's alive or dead? I'm never sure.
I think Ken is still alive.
Is he still alive? Okay. He just looks so frail, I guess, when I was thinking last. Anyways, he's into the fourth turning of the Dharma. Mm. And when he talks about the fourth turning of the Dharma, what he's talking about is sort of like the integration of all of the Buddhist wisdom, including the Vajrayana, the Maha Mudra stuff, with the insights of Western developments, including, like, this idea of, like, developmental structures and stages, and the idea of shadow work. And one of the things, so anyways, I've just been really feeling that lately, like, feeling like the, not just the need for integration of structures and states and shadow work, but also, like, the general synthesis of Eastern and Western esotericism as being really, like, the frontier of evolving culture. Because, like, you and I and David and Rory were talking about this the other night at dinner about, I'm very interested in this Otto Spengler, Decline of the West, stuff where he basically talks about like the rise and fall of different cultures. And according to Spengler, the culture that's been dominant for a long time has been what he calls the Faustian culture, which arose in like 1400 in the Rhine River Valley and is all about like chronological time and industrialization and sort of
machines, progress,
science,
yeah,
technology,
cogs in the wheel. And it's so interesting how like, man, like that really like pervades our consciousness as modern people, that like, you know, the metaphors of like cogs in the wheel and, oh, your mind is like a computer. Like, we are so influenced by that Faustian cultural veil to see things as machines.
Yeah.
Even when they're like not.
Absolutely. And Spengler's whole point in that book, which he wrote around like 1900, so like 120 years ago, is that the West is in the decline phase of its culture, and you could see it even then, even more so now. And so then the question becomes like, okay, well, what is the next arising dominant paradigm going to be now that this one has like come to its fruition and like no longer has any numinous power in it, in the sense of like whatever like religious ideas that used to hold it together have sort of fallen to pieces. Anyways, I'm interested. So I've been actively interested in that. And it just sort of occurred to me recently that this fourth turning of the Dharma and the integration of Western and Eastern brilliance is probably what the next major culture that arises is going to have. And something that I think about often in connection with this is like, there, you know, all of the Golden Dawn and, you know, Crowley and that sort of stuff came from some of the first translations being completed of both the Greek magical papyri, which were, you know, Egyptian, Greek, Judaic stuff, and also the first translations of the Dhammapada, the early Buddhist stuff, and the Upanishads and everything. That was all, like, coalescing around that time, the late 1800s.
And you can see how it like flowered through the last century with like people in the 60s like making pilgrimages to India and getting way into, you know, like people know what like Atman and like Brahman is, and like people have had this sort of like quasi Hindu influence, quasi Buddhist, Zen, yeah, you know, yeah, it's like it's made its way.
And getting into, you know, yoga and all, yeah, of that cool stuff. But one of the things that hasn't been super well integrated, I don't think, yet with Western thought, something which Crowley was not aware of, the Golden Dawn was not aware of, is the Vajrayana, which the Tibetans were keeping that, like, tight-lipped to themselves until, like, the 1970s when the invasion of the Chinese, like, forced the Tibetan diaspora. And, of course, so, like, when was that? So, like, the 1970s... Is that like 50 years ago?
I guess so.
At this, anyways, point, that was when the first like Vajrayana text started to become available, and like when, you know, Tibetan Vajrayana teachers started teaching. So the Vajrayana is like the third turning of the Dharma.
Is that the Tantra?
Yeah, the Tantric Buddhism, which is huge, huge major thing, and I feel like it's still very much in the process of being integrated into the Western mind. Like, yeah, there's, you know, for example, I don't know, people, baby boomers in the 60s, I feel like lots of them are aware of, like, the Four Noble Truths or whatever, but probably not a lot of them are aware of, like, what exactly is Vajrayana, what exactly is Mahamudra or Dzogchen.
And, like, most people who think of Tantra think of, like, the Kama Sutra.
Yes.
Like, it immediately becomes sex.
Right. When it's actually, like, this art of transformation of, yeah, energies, including sexual energies.
Which also kind of, like, I mean, I think that also brings in the even more Eastern philosophy of, like, Taoism, where, like, the symbol of that philosophy is the yin-yang, which is, like, the most tantalizing 69, yeah, you know, mixing, fucking, fertilizing symbol there is.
Yeah, totally. So all that stuff, so, and yeah, all the deep Taoist stuff, which, speaking of deep Taoist stuff, like, that is actually, like, just arising. Like, there's a teacher named Damo Mitchell that David's really into, who's, like, a British guy who's studied super deeply in that and is like bringing this whole wealth of Taoist knowledge like forward. Anyways, all of this stuff is just like barely being integrated. And like what, and anyways, another analogy for this, sorry, is when they, in the Renaissance Europe, they discovered the Corpus Hermeticum and that created the Renaissance, the Corpus right. Hermeticum and the writings of Plato. It's like, that's how cultures get, you know, revivified.
New perspectives that like take them into new places. Yeah.
And all of this, which is to say, is something that really strikes me is that Ra Horkhuit and the other blue avians, I guess, they're the same color of blue as the primordial Buddha, Samantabhadra. I can never pronounce it. Samantabhadra.
How many syllables are there?
There's so many syllables, but he's the primordial Buddha. And he's a figure in, you know, tantric Buddhism.
Oh, and the Hindu gods are blue.
Also. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Krishna. Yeah. And, anyways, these blue gods, these like blue, anyways, I just think there's something like very deep about that. And there's something deep to me about the synthesis of Ra and the primordial Buddha, Krishna, whatever, like this whole deity vibration. And what was I thinking? Oh, and one of the more interesting works in Thelemic thought that I've drawn it to your attention is there's a book called Thelemic Tantra. I think it's called, yeah. And it's basically, it's like,
oh, yeah, I've seen that book.
Yeah. And it's a practice of emanating as Ra Horkhuit. And I just think that that's super cool. And now if I'm going to, the fourth turning of the Dharma,
Ken Wilber,
Ra brings me back to Ra. So this book, the Ra material, I want to dive into it again because it's been, I don't know, at least a few years since
maybe we should read it together.
I think we should read it because this whole Law of One stuff, there's something to it. There's really, obviously, you know, at a certain level, whatever, we're not one, not two, but we're certainly not as disparate as we seem now. And to go to this quote that I sent to Layla, have you pulled it up?
Yeah, Carolyn pulled this up. I actually would love to hear you tell me, Carolyn, what made you think of me.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to read it. Carolyn said this, so it's a little dialogue between the questioner and Ra.
So this person is channeling Ra. So right. There's a person who's like set up, they're like laying down, they have like an open Bible near their head and like two candles and like a basin of water, and this is like a woman who's gifted at channeling, and she's tuning into this frequency, which I think is interesting also because Ra Horkhuit, anyways, Crowley channeled Ra. What? Hold on.
I want plain water.
You want plain water? Rory, would you pretty please get Lulu's glass of water?
Rory's the best.
Thank you, Rory.
All right. So she's channeling.
Somebody's asking her questions while she's channeling.
So the questioner says, you spoke of wanderers. Who are wanderers? Where do they come from? The answer comes, I am Ra. Imagine, if you will, the sands of your shores. As countless as the grains of sand are the sources of intelligent infinity. When a social memory complex has achieved its complete understanding of its desire, it may conclude that its desire is service to others with the distortion towards reaching their hand, figuratively, to any entities who call for aid. These entities, whom you may call the brothers and sisters of sorrow, move toward this calling of sorrow. These entities are from all reaches of the infinite creation and are bound together by the desire to serve in this distortion. Questioner says, how many of them are incarnate on Earth now? The answer comes, I am Ra. The number is approximate due to a heavy influx of those birthed at this time due to an intensive need to lighten the planetary vibration and thus aid in harvest. The number approaches 65 million. The question, are most of these from the fourth density, or what density do they come from? The answer, I am Ra. Few there are of fourth density. The largest number of wanderers, as you call them, are of the sixth density. The desire to serve must be distorted towards a great deal of purity of mind and what you may call foolhardiness or bravery, depending upon your distortion complex judgment.
The challenge danger of the Wanderer is that it will forget its mission, become karmically involved, and thus be swept into the maelstrom of which it had incarnated to avert the destruction. The question, what could one of these entities do to become karmically involved? Could you give an example of that? The answer, I am Ra, an entity which acts in a consciously unloving manner in action with other beings can become karmically involved. Questioner, do many of these wanderers have physical ailments in this third density situation? The answer, I am Ra. Due to the extreme variance between the vibratory distortions of third density and those of the more dense densities, if you will, wanderers have, as a general rule, some form of handicap, difficulty, or feeling of alienation, which is severe. And then it continues on.
Yeah, so I thought of you for that. Because first of all, I find it so charming that in that text, like, basically, you know, regular life is talked about as a distortion.
The distortion. Yeah.
And, you know, have a distortion towards it, or heavily distorted towards a purity of mind. I just love it. What was I thinking? So it talks about the sisters and brothers of sorrow. And I have seen you cry laugh so beautifully so many times, like totally heartbroken, utterly embarrassed, totally finding deep hilarity in the incredible amounts of pain.
Thank you.
And I was like, wow, that really sounds like Layla. And I was thinking also where it was talking about, like, you know, they've experienced really intense difficulties, severe alienation. And I feel like both you and I have experienced, like, really intense depression and, you know, sadness and
feeling weird.
Feeling just so weird. And I know that, you've been vibing lately with exploring possible connections.
Neurodivergence.
Yeah. And, yeah.
Well, I feel like the part that really stood out to me was the first part where it's like, you know, a social memory complex, which I think is just a really wonderful way to describe a human soul. And like we talked about this on the podcast before.
I thought he was talking about a group of souls.
I think it means a social memory complex, as in like your individual person. I mean, who knows? Who knows what these people are talking about? It's open for interpretation. I mean, we've talked about how, like, you know, to bring up Ken Wilber again, Ken Wilber talks about, like, the thing that you can take with you through your lifetimes are, like, virtue and the the understanding of nothingness.
Yeah.
And I feel like your social memory complex is the thing that, like, keeps hold of that and keeps incarnating. It's, like, the thing that keeps coming back. And I really vibe with what this said, where it's like when a social memory complex has basically achieved the understanding of desire, just like gotten it, understood what that is, figured it out, kind of come to the end of it, they may decide to distort that full understanding into the idea that your purpose is to help others. And I know that that is like the bodhisattva notion. And I don't know if I've joked about this on the podcast before, but I'll do it again. How, like, Ken has talked about how there's, like, two choices for a fully enlightened being at the end of life, at the end of your physical vessel's life, is to either choose to just utterly dissolve into the consciousness again and return to source, or to sort of intentionally incarnate and, like, take birth where you think it might be the most beneficial for you to show up. And I've just often laughed because I'm like, Ken, that's really just one choice. Because if you choose the first option, then you wind up just being unenlightened again. Because, like, then you just go back into the soup and you just come out as every other thing that's sort of grappling with the whole thing.
Incredibly ignorant.
And if you want to hold on to your enlightenment, you kind of need to choose to come back. Like, if you think you're going to escape by dissolving into the oneness, joke's on you, because then you'll just be dissolved into the everything that, like, keeps trying to figure it out by coming back into incarnation. And the other option is to intentionally come back into incarnation with some memory of yourself. And it sounds like that's what this is talking about, is, like, the souls that are like, well, the best thing for me to do is to just keep coming back, helping other people.
Yeah.
Showing up where people are sad and confused and doing what I can.
Yeah. I like the line in there. What was it about the karmic?
Oh, the biggest danger for the wanderers is that they might become karmically involved and thus be swept into the maelstrom of which it had incarnated to avert the destruction. So, like, the idea being that, like, the way that I interpreted that, I think you have a different interpretation, is that, like, in order to avoid the total dissolution of the wisdom self, you choose to incarnate into the distortion with some intact awareness, but you might forget and turn into an asshole and get karmically involved, and then you're, like, falling head over heels into the distortion and forgetting, basically.
Yeah, which is what makes it so dangerous and foolhardy to even try to keep.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, no, that's pretty much how I interpret it. I guess I just saw an emphasis on, like, the destruction or the danger that you'd come to help avert. Because I think in the context of the book, I think they're talking about, like, I don't know, I could be remembering this completely wrong, but I think there's something about how, like, each planet, like, comes to a certain kind of fruition, like they were talking about the harvest, and there's, like, a certain number of souls or whatever, social memory complexes that go on into the next density, and there's others who don't, and there's, like, a period of turmoil and confusion, and that a lot of people, souls, whatever, from the, as this was talking about the, what did it say, the sixth density, are here on Earth now to, like,
help
with the transition, try to harvest as many souls for the higher density as possible. And, you know, it's an interesting mythopoetic story, and I think it's one that's, like, resonating a lot with a lot of people these days, like, about this having come from a different vibration into this one. And I like that bit at the end where it was just talking about, like, yeah, the people who come for that purpose actually have hard times in their incarnation, because there is, like, this vibratory difference between, like, the essence of their being and this world. And I just really feel that is, like, I mean, one way that I experience that is, like, you know, I've never been, like, super comfortable in my body. I've never been, like, one of those folks who's, like, super somatically fluent or whatever. Like, I always have been awkward and
it's an ill-fitting suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta think about, like, it.
What the hell is this thing? Why do I have to operate it? What's going on? I have to feed it. If I don't move and stretch it, it gets very mad at me.
it's a complicated pet.
And so anyways, I just found that personally flattering. I was like, oh, finally, somebody has a flattering explanation for why...
why it's so hard.
Why I'm not graceful and sleek.
That makes sense, yeah. Yeah, well, I feel very flattered, Carolyn, that you thought of me, because I think maybe on some level, my desire to help people is a golden shadow. And I like to imagine that I'm a much more selfish and evil being in order to protect myself from how pathetic it would be if my true intention was to just be of service.
I know. I really saw that in action when, like, I don't know, we were in New Orleans and you and Rory were, like, talking about your, like, fucked up predatory relationship, and I was like, oh, you mean being in love? I like how Rory, like, had, you know, successfully gotten into his, like, you know, evil predatory mode by vulnerably confessing his love for you. Anyways, I was just like,
Wow, Layla really has to dress up this stuff to make it acceptable to her conscious mind. Really has to make it dark.
It has to be dark, yeah. I don't know what that is.
It's adorable.
It's adorable. It's adorable.
I mean, it totally is me. I mean, I'm also like that. Like, I feel like, you know, whatever my brand is associated with, like, kinkiness.
And dark shadow, power hungry, blah, blah, blah.
And meanwhile...
Machiavellian scheming. And meanwhile, Carolyn is like a literal care bear. The literal sweetest person. I guess that's why we get along. So we're like, guess what? We're bad. Don't find out.
Yeah.
Don't know how sweet we are.
Never find out. Yeah, I know. And we're also really secretly, maybe not so secret, just basic bitches.
Basic, so basic.
Live, laugh, love.
Live, laugh, love. That's what it's about. Midwestern moms.
Pumpkin spice, baby.
Well, I feel like that's a step too far.
You've evolved beyond pumpkin spice. I mean, pumpkin spice was kind of like 1990s basic bitches. What's the new?
I feel like I'm
what's
more cherry cobbler, you know? I feel like I'm more of a cherry cobbler.
Cherry cobbler.
That's my Wisconsinite. Crossword puzzles, you know.
Okay.
This is my...
His face. All right. I don't know. I'm feeling this might be a little bit chic for me, the sherry color. Yes, the baby's face is adorable, honey. How about you play with Brucey and his toys? You don't want to go upstairs and play with Brucey?
Okay. There is a very cute baby here.
Yes.
He's the newest cast member, silent cast member of the podcast.
Well, you guys reminded me that I actually had a dream about a week ago that involved a blue-skinned person.
I did.
So I ran up to my magical office attic and got my dream journal because I was like, I don't remember any more than...
Are you going to read us your dream?
I will read you this part of my dream if you're interested.
Please.
Okay. And Layla and I had been watching a lot of the show Ozark, so that's the preface. I'm Marty Bird's son and come with him to an apartment building where I wait outside while he talks to a waste management tech guy to make a deal about disposing of bodies. Another teen comes out of the apartment who is also his son. He's blue-skinned and wearing a strange black outfit, which I do remember, with a big chain around his neck. So he had kind of like a kinky S&M style outfit, but with like the chain collar, but also like in front of him. And he's having lots of fun and happy. He was, like, partying in the apartment before he left. He's about to go on a date and, like, go out on the town and have a good time.
I love this.
And he looked like Sid from the British show Skins, which I watched, like, a decade ago. So he just popped up from my subconscious after not thinking of that show or that character in years and years. But, yeah, blue-skinned dude, young man who's like, I'm about to go, like, party and meet girls.
I love this.
Blue skin people and desire, and I was like, "Oh yeah."
I feel like that's such a wonderful dream about just the truth that the god beings love to chain themselves to incarnation in order to meet girls and go to parties.
Yeah, weird that it was also like Ozark, dark, like we're talking about how we're gonna dispose of bodies and do this stuff, and this dude's just like, "Yeah, my dad does that, but like." I'm free. I'm a teen. I'm gonna go have some fun.
That's some like Saturn stuff too, you know, like Daddy Saturn disposing of bodies, dealing with like, I feel like the gods do have to think about what are we gonna do with the bodies once we are done.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely love to do like a whole dream interpretation process on this. Also, you know, it's Marty Bird.
Bird?
There's a bird connection in there.
Yeah.
I would be. There's plenty to think about there. No, thank you for sharing that with us, Rory. So, yeah, blue people. Are you seeing blue people in your dreams, listener at home?
I happened to notice on the Electric Yes Telegram chat that someone shared that they had a dream the night before one of the most recent emails for Sleepover Mystery School came out, where they saw a woman who was like a beautiful, sexy woman, like with vines coming out and surrounding her, and like even drew a picture of it because it captivated her so much. And then the next day got that email with the amazing artwork of Babylon holding Dionysus's vine. And was like, that's who I saw. That's what I saw in my dream. So I just want to remind you or ask you or inquire, and maybe this will jog your memory. Are you also dreaming of coming to Sleepover Mystery School next year?
Yeah. What was our Bruce in Electric Yes described, and also like a very deep dream about getting in. What was it?
I didn't read it. It was something about
showing up to a...
We're just sharing your business with the world, Bruce.
Oh, well, no. Bruce will be flattered. He'll be so happy that we're talking about him. We adore you, Bruce.
Bruce led a really incredible session of the Electric Yes Men's Group, which is a growing little container we're doing for the few dudes who are in Electric Yes.
We need more dudes.
Yeah.
We also, it's not open right now for registration. Mm-hmm. So if you're a dude listening, just save that pent-up desire.
And come to Sleepover Mystery School.
Sleepover Mystery School is about to open for registration.
All right, Bruce said, here's my psalms dream. I was in a village in New England somewhere, very picturesque. I walked into a banquet hall and the psalms initiates were in there. They were all electric and empowered in sexy formal wear. Half in lavender.
That sounds right.
We do that.
Half in lavender and half in a minty green color. They were drinking wine and raising glasses to their wealth and magic. There was a hot makeout scene involved, and it was all about magnifying wealth.
Hmm. We are rich beyond our wildest dreams. I mean, I think, you know, we started talking about the Invisible College, and I feel like you know that you are working on the Invisible College realm when people are having dreams about the stuff.
Absolutely. That's why I'm like so unstoppably enthusiastic about Sleepover Mystery School, because Oh, you want to go to the tea shop? We could possibly go to the tea shop, my love. Hold on, mommy's talking. Is that we do. We hear about this all the time. People who, when they come to the Mystery School, we end up hearing their stories of how they had really intense dreams. So this is the first time in Electric Yes that I feel like I'm hearing about these dreams before people are signed up for the school.
I've heard of several other people who have friends who are in Psalms who are now having Psalms dreams.
Oh, yeah.
So you might have been visited.
You might have been visited, you out there listening. You know, have you been seeing roses, bees, fountains, grapevines?
Babylon herself.
Lots of really cool, sexy people dressed up.
And you would just love to be one of them. And you are invited.
Yeah. And by the way, we're having something called Pillow Talk, which is a virtual open house for Sleepover Mystery School. And that is going to be on...
That is on the 15th? Let me pull up my calendar.
No, it's not the
15th. Let me pull up my
calendar. It's the 18th.
Sorry. That's on the 18th. Of September, that's a Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, where you can come and meet initiates from the previous year of Psalms and have your questions about the program answered both by those people and by the faculty.
Yeah, and I will be, the link for that will definitely be coming out to my email list. So join my email list at carolyngraceelliott.com if you haven't joined it already. I'll also probably be posting about it on Instagram, but I find it much harder to update links on Instagram. So anyways, just, you know, join my email list. You'll get the email invite to Pillow Talk, and you can come hear us talk about Sleepover Mystery School, and we'll also be having some of our satisfied initiates from the 23 cohort will be there. We're very excited to connect with our new 24 cohort. Just so many wondrous things in the works. We're getting new priests and priestesses.
That's right.
In, and if you haven't seen the sexy ad for Sleepover Mystery School yet, we have a very, very sexy ad that's also going to be on Instagram, and I think being sent out via emails. You should see that just so you can get a feel for the vibe.
For the level of coolness that you could experience in your life.
Yeah, and in the meantime, you can read The Law of One. Layla and I are probably going to pick it up again.
I think I want to read that.
I do want to visit it again.
Yeah.
I feel like it's, you know, there's...
It's an interesting way of thinking about things and looking at them.
Well, Rahurquit is also the baby of Nuit and Hadid. So
exactly.
There's much to contemplate.
Exactly. So much. Okay.
I was really thinking about the whole Invisible College thing and what we're doing in the songs and related to the blue-skinned people and the, you know, traversing through lifetimes to do not only the great work for themselves, but for everyone. And when I wrote an essay on the structure of the soul for David and learned that the, you know, when we die, we lose the nefesh and the ruach, which is the animal body and like the intellect thinking mind, and kind of all collapses into that supernal triad. And then we're reincarnated with new body and mind. But as we do the work, the great work, which I feel like Psalms is a big part of cultivating and helping people with, it's like you are learning to retain the ruach. You're learning to retain that conscious mind into your next lifetime. And of course, the seat of the ruach is Tifereth. And Psalms is all about helping its initiates find that like seat of consciousness in Tifereth.
Yes.
And to that point of what were you saying about, you know, remembering desire, remembering we are nothing. The pieces that we remember from previous lifetimes, that just solidifies the stronger our ruach is as we go from incarnation to incarnation. So Psalms is really all about doing that work that we're talking about.
So if you ever wanted to become an ascended master,
exactly,
you should probably join our school.
That's the first move that I would make.
Me too.
I mean, there's just such density of really rich, gorgeous magic and really rich, gorgeous, magical people to encounter in the school. I don't know where a similar density of such exists.
I really don't know. It's like so, like, I mean, you heard the episode, if you're a regular listener, you heard the episode of the people talking about their amazing relationships with each other. And
they're
just like,
so in love.
So in love.
It is like a loving
love.
Place.
It is so loving. That is like the joy of my heart, is that Sleepover Mystery School is a place where people fall in love, both like romantic, sexy love and also just like heart melting, true platonic love.
Oh,
like,
besties. So many besties.
I know. Just a clusterfuck of like besties, just like the most amazing cuddle pile of best friend energy of just like meeting people that you know have been your friends before. And there's so much comfort and love and like, really, where else does that happen? Like, I have been to so many like retreats and gatherings, and I've heard so many other people talk about retreats and gatherings and the like weird trepidation and kind of like the like holding back or like the alienation and just like the like we're trying, but it's not really there. And I just am like so impressed because Psalms is different.
I mean, yeah, something that's different about it, I mean, obviously, is that we have 4 immersions. So, like, people do get to see each other again and again. And also, the rituals that we do are all about, like, breaking down false egoic attachments and, you know, opening up to the truth, the divine truth. And hot damn, they sure do work.
They do. They sure do work.
They really work. And, I mean, it's always weird. I feel weird always talking about this part because it's like listeners at home, like, can I guarantee that you will meet your best new friends in Psalms?
We make no promises.
You know, no, obviously I can't, but I can say the people who've been through it so far, like, it's very, you know, people from all over the world, disparate little corners, very, I mean, there's people from all walks of life. You know, there's just a wide range of folks and like they somehow...
And years later now, the first group of people are still having wonderful meetups with each other and mm-hmm. being in love with each other. And we're now, because we have 2 groups, are having our first ever full Psalms reunion with people from the previous year and this just last year. And now those people are going to meet each other. And I feel like that is just going to be a whole nother like spark of amazing love and remembrance and friendliness.
I'm so excited for that. I did research that the first, because we've talked about our desire for
that reunion, which we call the Mahasiddha Jamboree, to morph into a larger festival someday. Yes. And I was researching about Burning Man, and Burning Man started as a small group of people having summer solstice parties on a beach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it eventually migrated out into the desert, where it was still quite small for a number of years, and then became huge. Anyhow.
Our vision is that someday when Carolyn and I are just old, amazing, beautiful, wise crones, there will be thousands of people at the Mahasiddha Jamboree, and it will just be like a whole sea of loving remembrance and like melting into shared identity and knowledge.
And we'll sit around cackling.
Exactly.
It'd be so great. I'm trying to think if there's... Oh, something that I wanted to mention is, like, I know that there's people listening who are, like, definitely want to apply for Sleepover Mystery School and also feel some trepidation because there is a risk of, you know, being told no. Like, some people will not be interviewed and some people will be interviewed and be told no. What would you say to those people, Layla, who are thinking about applying?
You should definitely apply anyway, because if it is the right thing for you, it will find you. And, you know, we had people who applied the first year, didn't get in, got in the second year. Like, get your foot in the door. If it is your intention, make moves towards the thing that you want. And whether you get to come or not, you will grow as a person in like... the process of moving in the direction of your heart's desire. I would say that also to the people who are concerned that they really, really want to come, but they just have no idea how they would afford it. Like, still try.
I mean, yeah, if you go back and listen to our episode with our 2022 initiates, a lot of them had crazy stories of how they suddenly, unexpectedly were able to afford psalms. So... if you apply, if you step out, you know, what is it that when you follow your bliss, doors open where previously there were no doors, said Joseph Campbell. So do that. Step out, follow your bliss, fill out the application. Doors may open where there are no doors.
Yeah. If it is your dream, then move in that direction and the dream of life will shift in accordance with your desire.
And again, the best way to get the application when it comes out is to be on my email list. So carolyngraceelliott.com. There's forms to join the email list. Do that.
And also at Carolyn's Instagram account, which is carolynelliott_.
Or Carolyn Lovewell.
Oh, sorry. It's Carolyn Lovewell _.
I need to update all my stuff.
You got
to
update all the stuff. We're both changing our names. It's a wild time of transition. Anyway, at Carolyn Lovewell _, you can find a way to get on the wait list, which will have many wonderful perks like early application. So if you are concerned about getting your foot in the door early, that is the thing to do.
All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. So like, subscribe, tell your friends. Thanks for tuning in to Sleepover Mystery School. We know that you're some of the coolest people in the universe because you listen to stuff like this. So thanks for taking the time to be with us. Have a great day. Bye-bye.